Stillman and Company here at Bridgestone Arena, live at the MGM Sports Lounge. We just had Barry Trotz on the program, and I will say this. I was expecting Barry Trotz to kind of say, hey, I want our fans to understand that while we want to win this upcoming season, our focus is really in the future. And he said the opposite of that. I mean, he said the exact opposite. So when I sit here and say, hey, you want to judge Trotz, judge him on Wood and Mullendyke and who they pick fifth and Cern and Stiga and give it time. That's not what he came on this show and said. But I'm just going to keep it real. That is what I thought, where I thought they were headed, and what he said are not the same things. And I am a little surprised by that. And I'm not going to say I'm disappointed by it, but, well, now I'm going to hold it to that certain level of accountability. So let's hit some of your phones on this. Reed, do we need to take a break here, then hit some phones, then hit Trevor? How do we need to do this? Probably should discuss this off the air, but that's
okay. Yeah, no, we're good to the bottom here.
Okay, good.
No real break.
Okay. So our phone lines, of course, are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I was reading the YouTube chat as Trotz was on the program, and I will tell you, if I had had more time, I would have told him about the one guy that says, if Barry is actually listening to Jared, we're cooked. Well, clearly he's not listening to me because he took the goalie, or he signed the goalie, and I told him last year, I said, don't sign the goalie. A couple of takeaways just from the interview itself. He said that Luke Richardson is not Andrew Burnett insurance. Uh-huh. He also said that he's convinced after talking to the players that Andrew Burnett did not lose the room, and that if he thought Burnett had lost the room, he would have fired him because he understands once you lose the room, you can't get it back. He said that he does want somebody other than Steven Stamkos playing center next to Steven Stamkos, but then said that he hopes that it is somebody internal, which I don't necessarily like because that probably means it's going to be Fedor Svechkov, and I want a more skilled second-line center, a more proven second-line center next to Steven Stamkos than Fedor Svechkov, which now I'm kind of hoping, okay, well, if James Hagans doesn't go back to college, then maybe Hagans can be that guy, because in my mind, I see Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Marchessault on a line, and I see Stamkos, Hagans, if you draft him and he doesn't go back to college, but he's probably going to go back to college, Stamkos, Hagans, and Bunting together, and I just don't like Svechkov on that line. I just don't necessarily like it. I asked him about the hot seat talk. He said he doesn't pay attention to the hot seat, doesn't feel on the hot seat, those kind of things. So make of that what you will, but he didn't say like, hey, ownership has said, hey, we're in this for the long haul. It's, hey, they want to know what it's going to look like over the next couple of years, which isn't the same as, hey, we're committed to this long-term plan. 615-737-1025. Joey says, this is why I love you, Jared, asking the hard questions and the important ones. You can tell by Trotz's laugh that he knew what to expect by coming on. I'm just going to say this. Before we started having Barry Trotz on every week, so before they had that great run 2 years ago, and those interviews were a joy to do, before all that happened, I mean, the Predators knew what they were getting into. Like, they knew this wasn't going to be grab ass and happy hour. And I think we kind of get to the crux of what it is people want to know. Again, I gave Trotz every opportunity to say, hey, this is about the future. This is about the long term. And yes, we want to win now, but, and he didn't say that. And as I say, you know, when it comes to how somebody answers something, I mean, you can't answer a question for somebody. Barry Trotz has been answering questions for 30 years as a head coach and now GM. He's a big boy. He knows what he's saying. And so, I mean, he put it out there. He said it. You know, this wasn't the same as some of the things I've heard in the past, but this was pretty on there. Neil says the Preds are not taking Roger McQueen. Trotz was talking about the wild cards in the draft being Martone and McQueen. I'm going to tell you, just trying to read the tea leaves, I think they like Hagans. But then when he said that compete was the most important thing. Now, Hagans did play very well in the championship games at the World Juniors. And so maybe that's the compete he liked. But apparently with Denoyer and Brady Martin and O'Brien, they're kind of more the high-end competitors. I also saw The Athletic talk to all these prospects. And with the prospects that they talked to, they asked, who do you compare to? And Hagan said Jack Hughes, which I didn't necessarily like because I'm not a huge Jack Hughes fan. But I will say that that does seem like a self-aware opinion to compare himself to Jack Hughes. Caleb DeNoye was asked, and Caleb DeNoye is in the mix for the third overall pick to Chicago, and DeNoye was asked who he sees himself as, and he said Jonathan Toews. And I said, yeah, he's trying. Hey, Chicago, I think I'm like Jonathan Toews. That was the vibe I got from that. A bunch of people, by the way, when asked who they thought they were, these prospects compared themselves to Matthew Tkachuk. One texter says, the interview made it seem like they would prioritize being a middle-of-the-road team rather than being bad for a period of time and then really good, and that's scary. I don't think it's that as much as it is. I think they think they can do both. Like, they think they can rebuild while they're competitive, and I just don't believe that. I think they have to pick a lane. They won't pick a lane. I'm sitting here saying, hey, pick a lane. I don't think they'll pick one. Or at least they won't pick one publicly, and I'm not going to try to pretend. Like, when it comes to, well, they said this, but they really mean, I don't do that. I do not do that. They said that they want to win now, so I think they want to win now. One texture says, DeNoye or Martone, not sold on Higgins. I've never liked drafting college guys high. Yeah, well, I'd say that Cale Makar is a pretty good player. So, I hear you. I'd rather take Misa. And Martone does put the puck in the back of the net, and that's how you win. But I think Higgins is the most skilled guy in the group. And Trott said that he was not worried. You know, I asked him about, did Higgins' season in college bother you? Because a lot of people are knocking him down the pecking order based upon those seasons. And he basically said, I saw him at the World Juniors, and he played really well there. I personally think they like Higgins. He did say it was from the list of Higgins, DeNoye, Martin, O'Brien, McQueen, and Martone, and that left off Frondell. So, Reed, do you think that's enough that we can say, hey, take Frondell off the list?
No, I think you just forgot to include him the first time.
That I forgot to include him?
Yeah, he was.
Or that Trotz wasn't really listening. And
no.
See, no, because could you imagine if Trotz had said, well, hold on, you forgot Anton Frondell. You know, then that would have been like a huge, oh, wow, you're really looking at Anton Frondell, right?
I think he was just going to say yes to anyone that you listed on there. You could have put my name in there. He'd be like, yeah, any of those guys could have been a Predator.
Higgins, DeNoye, Martin, O'Brien, McQueen, Jared Stillman.
No, that would probably, you know, put up his antennas. He's seen you try to skate.
Yeah, that's, I will tell you, that is something. Okay, Trevor joins us next. I got some thoughts with Trevor. We'll do a little hockey breather there, and then we'll get back onto the Preds at 5 o'clock, 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Trevor's next, Stillman & Company, live from Bridgestone Arena at the BetMGM Sports Lounge, 1025-1063 The Game. Stillman & Company, hey, tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Sounds take on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, pregame at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app or thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and by Family Leisure. And let's give something away, because I'm in a good mood right now. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025, and you'll score a four-pack of tickets to the FIFA Club World Cup match at Geodis Park on this Thursday night. So I was reading a story at Awful announcing about the Cam Ward Tubi documentary, which I was actually surprised about that somebody wrote a story about it. And it's amazing, because if I say something, it's, oh, Jared Stillman, he's a bad guy. Can you believe that he said that? But basically, Tubi, or Awful Announcing, they wrote that this is a big risk for Tubi and a big risk for Cam Ward as far as his docuseries is concerned. And so Trevor Maddich joins us now on the program, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, when it comes to Cam Ward, now that we know he's having a docuseries, this is going to run in September, so it's not like we're going to be picking apart the Cam Ward docuseries before camp. But to you, how much do you look at this and say, I think this could be a problem, this could be a distraction, and how much of it is just, hey, a guy's extracurricular activities and I need to mind my own business?
Yeah, I think that, Jared, it'll be a distraction if it's a distraction. And the people that'll know are the coaches and Cam's teammates. If he is not as fully locked in as he ought to be, if he misses something in practice or, heaven forbid, the game that he should have gotten, but he wasn't quite focused enough, and he was focused on other things when he should have been focused on getting ready for the moment that he's got to play football, then his teammates and his coaches will know. But the thing is, there are a lot of guys that are able to deal with extracurricular stuff as long as they compartmentalize it and don't let it take away from what's going on with football. I think the biggest way that could be a distraction is if he performs poorly, if he loses the first couple of games, throws a bunch of interceptions, looks like Will Levis 2.0 from the first two games of the regular season last year, that's where the distraction could come. Because then social media is going to tear him apart. Talk radio is going to tear him apart. And everybody's going to point the finger at this, whether it's true or not. And how Cam is able to handle that mentally and still remain a leader of this team would be the thing that is the potentially greatest distraction. So I just want to throw out there, though, that he wouldn't be the only guy that would be distracted if he is. I mean, take a look at Kyler Murray, the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. He signed a mega contract a couple of years ago. And in that contract, there was a clause that I'd never seen before. I think most people had never seen before. It required him to spend a certain amount of time on the iPad studying the game plan at home every day. And it was only like an hour, something like that. It wasn't a long, long time. But the fact that they put that into his contract tells you that the Cardinals believed that Kyler Murray was too distracted by video games or wherever else he was doing to keep from doing due diligence on football. So these are the things that Cam Ward needs to avoid. And if things really hit the fan like they did last year with social media and talk radio and things like that, when Will Levis played poorly in the face of a media blitz with his commercials of mayonnaise and then mayonnaise-flavored scented perfume, whatever the heck he had, these are the things that Cam Ward will find dangerous to him.
The Awful Announcing article says, quote, if you're going to do a docuseries on a rookie quarterback, wouldn't it serve his best interest to take a more humble approach? To capture the moments and images of the season, good or bad, organically would make for better TV. It might buy him some sympathy if he struggles. It might also make people love him more if he excels. Maybe Cam Ward becomes a success story. He'd better be for the sake of this docuseries. Do you think that for the sake of this docuseries, Cam Ward better be a success?
Yeah, I think so. I think so because if he is a success, then the docuseries will be seen as just, it's prescient. It's something that is foretelling his success in the NFL by telling the story of his success from high school through to becoming the number one pick in the draft. And all that is really good. If he doesn't succeed in the NFL, then that becomes a lightning rod for all the criticism. But see, there could be a whole big ton of criticism. And if Cam Ward ignores it and stays focused, then that won't be a distraction for him because it's not like he's going in to do reshoots and re-edits and all kinds of things during the season because the docuseries didn't pan out based on the comparison to how he's doing early in his NFL career. Those kinds of things aren't going to happen. So ultimately, whether or not this becomes a distraction to Cam is 100% up to Cam and his football character and his ability to focus. From a standpoint of everybody else, all the fans and everything else, this is either going to be a great triumph and they're going to really enjoy what a great quarterback they've got and what a great path he took to get here, or they are going to flip out and turn this into the absolute epitome of failure of brand building if Cam Ward either doesn't start or if he starts and performs poorly. So this is really, to me, more of a fan thing and a media thing unless Cam Ward lets it into his head, and then it becomes a Titans thing.
Trevor, my dad got on my ass yesterday because he thought I was too hard on Brian Callahan. And I have to say this, I like Brian Callahan a lot. I think he's a really good guy. But other than that, I have been incredibly disappointed this offseason because I don't feel like there's any change in Callahan. And I don't feel like there's any major changes as far as the organization is concerned, other than there's somebody different picking the players. But as far as the person sending the message to the players, it's the same guy, and I feel like it's the same message. And last year, I thought Brian Callahan was filled full of excuses and optimism and really just reckless behavior as far as a coach is concerned. I didn't think he ever held anybody accountable last year, and I don't see him holding anybody accountable now. There was a tweet Jarvis Brownlee Jr. sent out over the weekend that he later deleted, calling out Anthony Richardson for his rap video, which I don't necessarily like Anthony Richardson doing either. But it set me off because I'm sitting there thinking to myself, how can Jarvis Brownlee Jr., of all people, how can he try to talk smack against a team he's never beaten in his NFL career? The Colts are 4-0 since they drafted Anthony Richardson against the Titans. And the fact that he thinks he can talk drives me up a wall. But I'm like, that's what you get when your number one leader is Jeffrey Simmons, who doesn't even show up for the offseason program, even though the coach says the offseason program is going to be transformative. Trevor, I just think Brian Callahan's not cut out to be coach. I haven't seen anything that makes me think he is. Am I being too hard on Callahan?
I think that you are taking a snapshot that is a reasonable snapshot. I think, though, that he's got a chance to be a good coach. He was not a good coach last year. And if I'm a player in that locker room, I see a coach that tried a whole bunch of different things, and none of them worked. At quarterback, for example, he tried making Levis the guy. There was no quarterback competition. Mason Rudolph was never considered as having a chance to win the job. This was Will Levis's job, and that's it. And they did that so that Levis could then build his confidence and build his leadership position within the team. Well, he goes out there and struggles early, and coach keeps throwing him out there so he can develop him. And if I'm a player in that locker room, there comes a time when a guy is costing his games because he's making boneheaded decisions, not because he isn't good enough, but because he's making really dumb decisions and turning the ball over unnecessarily, those kinds of things, which is what Will Levis did the first two games, which cost them the first two games. And yet Will Levis is still going out there. And after a while, if I'm a player in that locker room, I'm thinking, well, goodness gracious, why am I busting my hump to try to get as good as I can be when the coach is sabotaging the team by putting a guy out there that can't play? At least he can't play yet. At least he can't play this month. Let's put it that way. Right? And so I think he might have lost the attention of some of the guys on the team that way. Then later in the season, he began publicly criticizing Levis. Instead of publicly making excuses for him, he was publicly criticizing him in ways that as a 12-year NFL veteran, I rarely saw when I was playing a coach due to a starting quarterback. I mean, normally the coach will say nothing about him or find something to praise and then chew him out behind the scenes. But to go public like that, that kind of thing is kind of weird. So I'm a player in that locker room, and I'm thinking, well, does the coach really have a plan for dealing with this quarterback, or is he just trying something and it fails and he's trying something else? So these are reasons that I think that you thinking like you do makes sense from a snapshot standpoint. But I think that Brian Callahan has a lot of success and history working with some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL as an assistant coach. And I think he saw some very good head coaches, how they manage teams and things like that. And I think that that he'll grow as a head coach. But another thing that needs to happen to support him is that his assistant coaches need to see what he's good at now and edify those things for Brian Callahan. And they need to see what he's still missing from a leadership standpoint and from an accountability standpoint and the ability to make the players not just respect him, but fear him and fear his wrath. And if he doesn't have those things organically now, then the assistant coaches need to fill in with their position groups doing those things that the head coach would normally do. Because remember, the job of the head coach is to create a culture, is to create the scenario within which everybody knows what's expected of them. And then, like you said, Jared, hold everybody accountable. I don't think those things were done well last year. And so it's up to the assistant coaches to help Brian Callahan fill in some of those gaps until he can grow as a head coach and grow them himself.
So I would agree with that, but he brought back pretty much the same coaching staff except for a new special teams coach. That's part of my disappointment in Callahan is I don't think Callahan holds anybody accountable, and I don't think he can put a foot up somebody's ass. And sometimes as a coach in the NFL, you got to put a foot up somebody's ass, and he can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. And, Jared, let me say this, that, you know, there's a lot of talk all the time about, well, he's a player's coach. Well, they think that a player's coach is one the guys like playing for because he's a nice guy and he takes good care of them. That's not a player's coach. A player's coach to the guys in the locker room, like for me, a player's coach is the one that gets the most out of the guy on my left and the guy on my right, because I'm going to give the most. And if I'm not giving the most, I expect that coach to make sure that I am and to put a boot up my backside so that we win. Because ultimately, a player's coach is not the guy that's easy and fun to play for. Ultimately, a player's coach is the guy that gets the best out of everyone and gets everybody pulling in the same direction as a team. Because when you win, you tend to stay on the team. They don't tend to hire new coaches and GMs who bring in a whole new roster. When you win, you get re-signed and you get paid. That's what a player's coach is. So some of the most difficult coaches to play for that I've ever been around on college and in the NFL, I would consider a player's coach because they got the best out of me, they got the best out of my teammates, and we maximized our potential, even though it was hard. Look at Bo Schembechler at Michigan. You know, they've got a sign up in their football complex that says, those who remain will be champions. And while they played for Bo, a lot of his players back in the heyday of Michigan football hated him in the moment. But they loved him for what they what he expected of them, and they loved him for the team and the individual players that he developed them into, even though in the moment they hated it. And that, to me, is a player's coach.
Trevor Maddich is with us on the program. More with Trevor on the other side, 615-737-1025. Trevor presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics when experience matters. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Red's Hot Chicken. Red's Hot Chicken on West End is bringing the heat. Don't miss their hot chicken and waffles or the mac and cheese crunch wrap. Grab a $30 gift card now for only $15 while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Trevor Maddich with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics when experience matters. Trevor, Pete Thamel has come out and said that the decision on whether or not to expand the basketball tournaments for 2026 is expected to come in the next few weeks. The expansion would be to no more than 76 schools. The reason I bring that up is because now that baseball is over and conference media days have not yet started, this is where the kind of league drama starts to happen. The realignment, the college football playoff, the TV contracts. So I ask this to you as a college football expert. What do you expect to happen next in the world of college football? And do you think that we can sleep easy for the next 3 weeks until we get to conference media days? Or do you think it's going to be cataclysmic what we're going to see upcoming as far as conference realignment, the playoff, and the future of college sports is concerned?
Jared, I think that the main focus of conference media days from a standpoint of their questions from the media is going to be, what in the world are you going to do to implement the house agreement, which allows direct payments of players by schools? Right now, NIL allows for businesses and outside entities to pay players. In addition to that, now the house settlement, which is the resolution of a lawsuit, is allowing schools to pay a little over $20 million directly to players. And the question is, how in the world is that going to work without generating a million lawsuits? For example, I mean, if you're paying players directly, how are they not employees? Schools do not want players to be employees because then they have to pay workman's comp, possibly going well into the future, for injuries that linger after college football. They've got to pay their share of payroll taxes. There's all kinds of things that need to be done that, if the players are employees, will cost the schools a whole lot more money, and the biggest schools can afford it. But after the biggest schools, who's got $20 million plus extra workman's comp, plus extra to pay taxes and things like that, that they can take on top of what they're already spending and throw it in there to pay these players and compensate these players? And the answer to that is very few. And so how are they going to do that without getting sued by the players to make them employees? They're already being sued now by a group of female athletes who want a bigger share of the retroactive payments that go back several years from the House agreement to former players. Well, they want more. How are they not going to get sued by current female athletes from a Title IX standpoint? Because here's $20 million that these schools, a lot of the bigger ones, are going to be spending. Well, how is that going to get distributed? Football and men's basketball at most schools generate most of the revenue. So should that be given mostly to them, or does Title IX require an equitable distribution? In that case, what's the definition of equitable? And that may end up in court as well. I think you're going to find big issues with the transfer portal, because until that gets settled down and there are hard, fast rules that everybody can adhere to without being sued by the players for illegal restraint of trade, then you're going to have player movement that is so dramatic that you won't be able to build a roster from one year to the next. And so these are things that I think will be, talked about a lot in the meetings, because the media will be curious about it. And I don't think there'll be a resolution of any of it until a whole bunch of lawsuits play out, and probably until Congress passes a law that establishes all these things in all 50 states. And so we're a long ways away from there being settled solutions when it comes to paying players, employing players, and player movement in college football.
Trevor Maddich with us on the program. I saw that CBS signed a deal with the Pac-12, with the new look Pac-12. I got to ask, does the Pac-12 still really exist here? I mean, what's going on? And where was CBS a couple years ago? The games they have for the Big Ten stink. Nevada at Penn State, those games stink. Where was CBS a couple years ago to save the old Pac-12, Trevor?
Well, you know, that's part of the problem, that they didn't have a secure source of revenue from their media partners that was secure enough and high enough to keep teams on the West Coast to want to stay with the conference on the West Coast. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, these schools that are that went to the Big Ten, for example, you know, they're getting, or will be getting, depending on, you know, which school it was, a massive amount of money. The most money of any conference in college football is the Big Ten. And my guess is that some of them had, are getting a full share at the beginning. Some of them won't get a full share for a while. Either way, down the road, they're all going to be getting a full share. And at least financially, they are in a good position. UCLA reportedly was $100 million in debt with their athletic department before they went to the Big Ten. Well, that whole Big Ten thing is going to end up paying that off and more. So, you know, this is the problem, that they weren't able to generate enough reliable, dependable cash flow to keep those schools on the West Coast. And now the Pac-12 is sort of starting over again. I mean, it's good for them, I guess, that there really is, from a playoff standpoint, no such thing as a Power 5 conference anymore. Because the way things are now, the top 5 ranked conference champions get automatic bids. It doesn't matter if you're Power 5 or not Power 5. And so the Pac-12 has every bit as good a chance to get a team into the playoff in their automatic bid as anybody else. And they're adding, you know, I mean, Washington State and Oregon State are the ones that are the holdovers. So nationally, that doesn't move the needle at all. They brought in solid programs from the Mountain West, like Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State. They're talking about adding Texas State, which actually is would be a sneaky good move if they're able to pull it off, to get to the 8th team to remain a football conference. But, you know, they're just sort of starting from scratch. So they still exist, but they are no longer what their motto has been, their brand, the Conference of Champions, until they prove that they're now the Conference of Champions with this new lineup.
Trevor Maddich, as always, is presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff. We will talk soon.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program. I expect there to be a lot of drama around college sports for the rest of the summer. 615-737-1025. There was something that I was ranting and raving about for about the last month, and within the last 2 hours, I have changed my opinion. We'll get to that next. Dominic Company, 125 The Game.